It's showtime.
Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. We are off and running on this, the 28th day of August, 2018. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where we live. That's where you go if you would like to be part of the madcap multimedia wacky zany rollicking real-time extravaganza that is The Horn chat room. Waiting for you there right now is Anatole, early arriver. And, of course, longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a spacing guild master, has nonetheless elected this evening not to fold space and has remained Sparky and not folded space to become Man Cave. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid, and it's Tuesday, Titanic Tuesday on the Horn, and I am proud to announce that this and tomorrow and Thursday and Friday are all fundraising-free radio. Yes, this program is brought to you by the Horn subscribers. Thank you to each and every one who subscribes via PayPal or Patreon to The Horn and keeps this program, helps keep this program on the air and provides about a week of the costs associated with keeping this whole enterprise, this whole effort going. Thanks this evening going out to subscribers on the 28th. Harold, thank you, Harold, the president and CEO of Sochtris, the secret open carry Happy Trails Roundup Society. Thank you very kindly as well to Randy in PA, long-time subscriber and partial sponsor of the program. Thank you to Sharon. Thank you, Sharon, very, very kindly for being a partial sponsor and supporter of the program. And thank you to Angel. Thank you very much indeed. As well as to John, who knocked out the last remaining dollars last night. Thank you, John. Thank you very, very kindly. Very kindly indeed. Thanks as well to Philip in Texas. Thank you very much to Smitty in Florida, and thanks very kindly indeed to Charlene in Rhode Island, who does so much to help keep the program on the air. Thank you one and all, and to all of our subscribers, thank you. You are the sponsors of Tuesdays, Wednesdays, Thursdays, and Fridays programs, and there will be not another word said about fundraising. Glory, glory, hallelujah. Yes, indeed. So that takes a great weight off and makes life ever so much more pleasant. And let's see here. Where to begin? Well, hey, you know, let's have a giggle, shall we? And it's kind of a it's kind of an experiment. The question is something, can something visual be funny in audio only? We're going to use as our experiment, of course, the funniest man in America, Donald J. Trump. No, not really, but no, we're going to use Trump as our guinea pig in this experiment. What we have here is a bit of tech, and look, if anybody knows about technological glitches and failures and so forth, I'd be that guy. because the fact of the matter is, well, and there's any number of times that you've tuned in and heard me struggling with the technology. Largely, that's because we operate on a shoestring here with ancient equipment and all that kind of stuff. On the other hand, the White House is a multi-million, tens of millions, maybe billion-dollar operation where they can have anything they want and they can make anything. And so there was a phone hookup with, because I don't know if it kind of got lost in the shuffle, but allegedly the United States and Mexico have reached a new agreement to replace NAFTA. Now, that isn't exact, and that's how it was pitched, but that's not exactly true because, of course, NAFTA is a treaty that had to be ratified by the Senate. And you can't just have a do-over or a replacement. But that's how it was pitched because the only thing that comes out of this White House are, you know, lies. And as a consequence of that, there was a celebratory phone call between Julius Geezer, Hail Geezer, and the president of Mexico. But the thing is, Julius Geezer's not the kind of guy to let anybody text stuff before they roll. So the phone call didn't work out quite as well as hoped. And then some Jasper decided to overlay the theme music from Curb Your Enthusiasm to it. So the question is, even though we don't have the video of it, is it still funny? Maybe this can be a recurring thing, a recurring bit. Is it still funny? You tell me.
I believe the president is on the phone. Enrique?
No, he's not on the phone. He's not on the other button either.
Yeah, you can hook him up. You tell me what. Oh, yeah? It's a big thing. A lot of people waiting.
Introducing President Kenya. Yes.
Hello? You want to put that on this phone, please? Hello. Be helpful.
Okay, I mean, I'm sorry. I think it's funny. I deliberately minimized the screen so that all we had was the audio. And, hello? Hello? And, of course, that immediately takes us to, yeah, let me see if I can call it up pretty quick. I bet I can. Let's see. Yeah.
Hello? Hello, Dimitri. Listen, I can't hear too well. Do you suppose you could turn the music down just a little?
Yeah, but see, can't you turn the music down just a bit? Yeah. but see, in the nuclear crisis that was Dr. Strangelove, they had working telephones. Oh, by the way, speaking of working telephones, did you catch this little thing? It may have been just Russian propaganda coming out of Mother Russia, home of the gasoline engine-powered nuclear missile. But they were bragging the other day that Russian technology is being used in the Oval Office for the secure connection between Comrade Kumquat and huggable, lovable, cuddly, wouldn't hurt a flea unless he was poisoning them with polonium or having them thrown out a window, Vladimir Putin. No, really. Russian technology in the Oval Office with encryption. Even. Don't know if it's true. Wouldn't be surprised if it is. What's that? What's that, President Merkin?
Oh, that's much better. Yeah. Yes. Fine, I can hear you now, Dimitri. Clear and plain and coming through fine.
And on the other hand, Donald Trump couldn't Couldn't hear the president of Mexico clear and plain and coming through fine. You want to transfer
that to this phone? How about that? Phone doesn't work.
I'm coming through fine too, eh? Good, then.
Yeah, not so much.
Well, then, as you say, we're both coming through fine. Good. Well, it's good that you're fine, then, and I'm fine. I agree with you. It's great to be fine.
It's wonderful to be fine. Wait, why does the president of Mexico suddenly have a Russian accent? I don't know. But that's just a little something funny. Something cute to start off the program. I remember when Dim Leader looked through the wrong end of the binoculars. He was looking into North Korea. And for some reason or another, North Korea looked really, really, really tiny. I don't recall, you know, there's something to be said for minimum levels of competence. I don't remember that sort of thing happening during the 8 years in which the president of the United States was someone that the white wing thought was a Kenyan Muslim usurper. I don't remember that. Do you remember that? I don't. I'm flummoxed. Sorry. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you very kindly. Steve, still recovering, I trust, and getting better every day. Says, sounds good on the Xbox tune-in. Thank you, Steve. Thank you very, very kindly. Keep getting better, brother. Keep getting better. Subject line coming from Lee in New York. Is audio funny without video? Howdy, Bob. Years ago, people listened to Edgar Bergen and his dummies. No, Trump wasn't one of them. Wait a minute. Okay, that was warranted. Think of it. Ventriloquism on radio. Jeff Dunham also told of a group of deaf people in the audience. Yes, it can happen. So, we'll call it a successful experience. It was, and the Curb Your Enthusiasm theme absolutely makes it. If you want to see it in all of its comedy glory, run over to Crooks and Liars. Crooksandliars.com has it there, and you can just put it on a loop and just, right. Because that theme and the underlying philosophy of Curb Your Enthusiasm it fits. It does. So now we've talked about Trump. I'm sure we'll talk about Trump, you know, some more. But I kind of want to not talk about Trump for a minute. It's Titanic Tuesday and everything. Instead, I want to, oh God, he's going to do it, isn't he? Yeah, he is. I want to talk about the ancients. And this is just, you know, this is just how the internet rabbit hole works. I bumped into a story, I think I was running around Instagram earlier, and it came from Archaeology Magazine. Yeah, by the way, Hung Like Jesus is just unilateral bullshit. that's a good description for any phone call on which Donald Trump is on. But I found this story coming out of Archaeology Magazine. You know, I'm a fan. And it had to do with a really, really huge discovery a couple of years ago in 2016 as excavations were underway for a new subway station in Athens that they wound up not building, but they managed to destroy the archaeological site just the same. And they found a graveyard with about 1,500 people in it, some of which dated back to, oh my goodness gracious, about the 7th century BCE. And maybe in a minute you'll understand why I'm going where I'm going. That or you'll tune away. I hope you don't, but it's a possibility. Got to deal with it. as governance was developing in the ancient Athenian city-state, they had gone from being ruled by kings to being ruled by a group of wealthy old men. They were referred to as archons. And then, suddenly, along about 632 BCE, along comes this dude who had become famous in, I guess, what we would call reality entertainment in the ancient Greek world. He was the first celebrity Olympic champion. And he had a celebrity Olympic champion name. His name was Megacles. His sidekick was named Testicles. No, it wasn't. Megacles, Big Cles, I guess, Megacles, Big Cles, had some connections to another Greek city-state. His father-in-law was the tyrant of a city-state called Megara. And Megacles got it in his head that he wanted to be the tyrant of Athens. So he gathered up a small army, and he tried to run a coup. Well, it didn't work. And so instead, Megacles and his brother, or brother-in-law, I'm not sure which, hid out in the temple of Athena and eventually got away. Well, his soldiers, his army, hid out in the temple of Athena too. And the archons promised to them that if you surrender, you will be treated fairly and you won't be killed. I'm completely screwing up this story. Megacles was one of the archons. The guy who ran, and the science fiction buffs will go, well, of course. The guy who ran the coup was named Cylon. No, really, C-Y-L-O-N. If you want to get positively Greek about it, we'll call him Kilon. The joys of broadcasting here at the fabulous Kincaid Mansion. Anyway, I was screwing up the story. The guy who ran the coup's name was Kilon, Cylon, C-Y-L-O-N. Megacles was one of the archons. And Megacles was one of the ones who made the promise that if the soldiers came out, they would be treated fairly. But the thing is, going all the way back into the earliest forms of history, we find out that when they came out of the Temple of Athena, where they had gone for sanctuary, where it would have been improper to send in folks to slaughter them in the temple, you know, shedding blood in the temple of the patron goddess of Athens and everything, you know, Athena Parthenos, Athena the Virgin. Yeah. Well, they slaughtered him, and back in 2016, they found the bodies of the guys who got slaughtered. About 80 of them, buried with honor, but all of them had been killed by a blow to the head, and they were chained at the wrist. Yeah, bear with me here. Megacles was one of the ones, Cylon got away, but Megacles was one of the ones who had a hand in killing them. And as a consequence, the people got together and did some voting, And they said, fuck it, Megacles has got to go. And they did so by writing, by scratching his name on a little pot sherd and throwing in a pot, throwing it into a bigger pot to be counted. And the majority ruled, early democracy, and Megacles was exiled. And what's more, and this is another one of those Greek words that comes down to us and changes meaning through the millennia. Miasma was declared upon the descendants of Megacles. So he, along with all of his extended family, were made to leave Athens. And even down through the generations, as his descendants would be born, the miasma would follow them, so that they would be tainted with the actions of their ancestor. I guess the ancient Greeks felt like, it occurs to this day in various cultures. I know it exists here in Appalachia in hillbilly culture. He can't help it. His daddy was a drunk too. He comes by it honest. Happens all the time. And I'll bet whatever culture you grew up in, you can probably find an example of it there too. But the thing is, the ancient Greeks would do something about that miasma, and they would say, nope, sorry. Your great-granddaddy killed people he promised that he wouldn't kill. So we're not going to trust you with any public power or influence. You can do whatever it is you want to do or be whoever, but what you can't be is part of the government here. And oddly enough, it runs down through history. Because it even comes down to us here in the new 90 states of Merca. Oddly enough, it comes down to us in the passage, I think. Let me recall. Just looking it up real quick. Let's see here. Got it. Just give me a hint. Yeah. I'm not going to sit here and read silently the entire Constitution, but there's a passage in the Constitution of the United States. Oh, there it is. It's not in the impeachment section. But there is a segment that says no attainder of treason. Oh, it's in the treason section. See, that's why I got confused. No attainder of treason shall work corruption of blood as stated in section 3. Or in section 3, of the, right. Because this had come down, the idea of attainder and corruption of blood
Well, we can see it. So that was miasma in ancient Greece, and it comes down to development of English law. And one of the things that the writers of the framers of the Constitution said is, we're not going to have any more of that bullshit. Yes, Flavio pointing out, Megacles was ostracized. Yes, that's what the little scrap of pottery was called, an ostracon. And if enough people wrote your name on an ostracon, you had to leave. I know it seems ever so convenient, and that was direct democracy too. Yes, Steve in New York says, Megacles. I know this story. This is where Godzilla defeats Megacles with the help of Gamera. Great story. I can't get anything past you, Steve. But there's a thing here. There's a reason I bring all of this up. Because one of the popular theories right now is that one of the ways that we might get rid of Donald Trump is if sufficient evidence is developed against, say, Junior or Eric or Precious Ivanka. We can pretty much guess that Barron and Tiffany will be left out of it because Tiffany's mother was smart and kept her from spending a hell of a lot of time around her daddy. And so she's not involved in any of the filthy business that Junior and Eric and Precious Ivanka are involved in. And it all kind of loops together because there's an anecdote out now from an interview with Stormy Daniels and Michael Avenatti, where she says that if one is very, very generous, that when Trump was grunting and sweating and rooting away on her, that he might have lasted, wait for it, 2 minutes. And so that's you know, just consider the 2 minutes of rutting, after which he rolls over after being spanked with that copy of Forbes and says, you were great. You reminded me of Ivanka. I know. Ill. It's just icky. But I read that story and you know, the idea that a reality sports star would try to run a coup on the ancient Athenian city-state with the connivance of a rival city-state, well, it wasn't lost on me. But lo and behold, it was the people who stopped the coup, Megacles, who kind of violated the law by killing his coup army, Cylon's coup army, that the miasma wound up working on. We might want to pay attention to that as we continue to talk about impeachment. I'll be back in a second. Just a little bit of breaking news of the family variety. It happens. But anyway, I was trying to make a point about impeachment. And about the fact that we don't really pay much attention to what happened to Cylon afterward. Of course, he was unsuccessful in his coup, whereas Trump was successful in the coup that he ran in conjunction with Mother Russia. But the price was ultimately paid by the people who thought that they were doing the right thing by the Athenian city-state by stopping the coup, and then they fucked up and killed the members of the coup. I'm not saying that anybody's going to kill anybody in this situation, but the lesson was not lost on me.
I would love to see Donald Trump impeached. But I want to make abundantly clear that as a result of the operation of the constitutional amendment, which imposes term limits on a president, we then cannot, that operates to make impeachment this lengthy, stylized process, which even the framers make clear is not a criminal process or even a legal process. It's a political process. It could go as fast as it need go, except for the insistence that it go slowly, you know, all deliberate speed, to use some Supreme Court language. So I thought we might sort of tease that thread out a little bit and try to, and viewing everything in the light most favorable to the Democrats, that there's going to be a blue wave, that we're going to take back the House, that we're going to get a majority in the Senate, but that it is mathematically impossible that we will have a 67 to 33 majority. How long would it take for impeachment? I think I talked with Scott about this a little bit in terms of the Nixon impeachment or non-impeachment. We know what the timeline was on Clinton. The two that might be more helpful that I have not thoroughly researched yet are the impeachment of Andrew Johnson and the impeachment of the Supreme Court Justice Chase, which was tried in the Senate in the early 1800s with Aaron Burr presiding because he was Vice President of the United States. The question is, did those two more ancient processes take as long as what we do in the modern era, when there are lawyers who have money to make and it's got to take time because lawyers have to bill hours? But in regard to treason, the Constitution is abundantly clear that even if somebody is convicted of treason, that we're not going to take away all their property, and we're not going to take it out on the kids or the grandkids or generations as yet ungot and undreamt of. Because among other things, the young republic was quite fragile, was far from properly established, and, you know, the framers thought, maybe we want to make it really, really clear that all that stuff is over with and we're not going to do it anymore because, hey, the revolution might fail yet and they might come after us, and if they come after us, we don't want them coming after our kids and taking all our property, because that's how England handled it. So, it's worth noting that trying to impeach Donald Trump, as badly as I would like to see it happen, might wind up doing to the Democrats what the aftermath of the coup of 627 BCE did to the archons of ancient Athens. That's right, Ron and Raleigh pointing out, darn it, when you said you wanted to talk about the ancients, I thought you were going to talk about ancient aliens. By the way, you let the obligatory Star Trek reference slip by without notice. Archons, remember. That's true. So even when I don't note it, we still manage to get an obligatory Star Trek reference in. But here's where it gets interesting. Implicit in this latest theory is that Donald Trump would resign if there was sufficient evidence against Precious Ivanka, Don Jr., Eric, to send them away for a very long time, and he resigns so as to protect the kids. Then he gets his pardon from Mike Pence, and the United States agrees not to prosecute say, particularly Don Jr., for his egregious violations of federal law. Which is essentially saying that if you walk away, Donald, we will not work attainder against your kids. But it's not, actually, because the charges would be against Don Jr. And there are those out there who are saying that in the coming week or so, we're going to see an indictment of Don Jr. Now, nobody knows that. Robert Mueller's investigation is unlike, say, Ken Starr's back when Brett Kavanaugh was working on it. It's not leaking. Mueller's investigation is not leaking like a sieve. So nobody really knows if Don Jr. is going to be impeached. People just hear things. Lee in New York says, subject line impeachment, I do not want the orangutan impeached. Without the Senate voting in favor of conviction, it will only make this a third impeachment to add to the list. I want Trump policies and people damaging the nation stopped. The Democrats may be able to get that done. And that's kind of where I come down on it, too. I want him beaten in 2020 if he has not already resigned by then. The people who were predicting his resignation for this past summer, I'd say, have lost their bets. But there yet remains, September, October, November, 4 months. There's next year, 12 months, 4 months of this year, that's 16, 27 months 27 months in which he has to resign. One would be surprised if he was actually campaigning for his second term, but who can say? Steve in New York, subject line, protect the kids. If it were his hide or Don Jr.'s hide, he'd not think twice about throwing Don Jr. under the bus. Well, that's true. He already refers to him as a fuck-up. And there is that one anecdote provided by Don Jr.'s college roommate of Pappy slapping him around and berating him for not wearing a suit and tie to a Yankees game, instead wearing his Yankees jersey. And he got the spit knocked out of him for that. Good dad, that Don Sr. Good dad. But you just see these things wandering around in history. And the little connections form. And that's what makes history so fascinating. Marty writing in says, not that I was part of the guesstimate that Caligula resigns during the summer brigade. It's how long until the equinox? The autumnal equinox, I think, except that's 25 days? 25 days, is that it? It's like September the 22nd or something. But it's clear, and I don't even have to say this, more on ancient astronauts. See what you started, Ron? Larry says, the ancient astronaut theory is not as fake as you might think. Yes, the Archons were terrible soul suckers. Some of these cities way, 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 way before 7th century BCE were so much more advanced than history will ever tell us. Yeah, but see, I don't buy into ancient astronauts because I'm a humanist. And it denigrates the brilliance of cultures all over this planet to say that Egyptians couldn't come up with this or Mayans couldn't come up with that. You see what I mean, Larry. And no, there's no... Larry says, what would Mueller need to actually flip 16 Republicans in the Senate? It ain't going to happen. 16 Republicans are not going to flip in the United States Senate. It just isn't going to happen. Lindsey Graham roused himself up and delivered remarks on his dear friend John McCain today, while at the same time lobbying for the near-term dismissal of Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III. Right? Some thinking that Lindsey wants to be Attorney General, but, well, I've got a pretty good idea that Geezer Disgustus would very much like to have Rudy Giuliani be Attorney General. And you know what? If it were to happen this year, Rudy Giuliani would be confirmed. Yeah, really. Susan Collins would issue a press statement saying that
she really needs to know that Rudy Giuliani believes in the rule of law.
And Rudy Giuliani would say, yeah, I believe in the rule of law.
I can now vote for Rudy Giuliani.
I mean, that's how it worked out with Kavanaugh. Never mind the background, never mind the backstory, never mind the history, never mind the previous statements, the previous declarations. Lie to her and she'll believe. Ah, that's true. Wait a minute. This just in from Tony. Ancient aliens were dinosaurs. Venus is proof. Ooh, I love it when we carry over from one program into the next. Well played. Well played indeed. How do I know that you could never get 16 Republican senators, even if Donald Trump was to be impeached for shooting somebody in cold blood on Fifth Avenue, in plain sight of everybody, a million cameras, 77 different angles, no doubt whatsoever that he was the one pulling the trigger? How do I know that? I know that because of Jim Inhofe of Oklahoma. You know, we the people spent the better part of yesterday watching a bizarre installment of Theater of the Absurd, as the flag over the White House went all the way up and then eventually came halfway down. I had guessed, speculated, that it happened because maybe Mattis and John Kelly had found the last remaining shreds of their Marine Corps dignity and said, hey, we're walking. Yeah, you don't get this right. We're walking. But it turns out that was not the case. Apparently, Kelly did remonstrate at least three separate occasions with Chlamydia Claudius, and he wouldn't budge. But then the letter came through from the American Legion and the Veterans of Foreign Wars, saying basically, we've sucked your ass, Donald. We've tossed your salad. And we've got a whole bunch of veterans in this country willing to do the same. But we really can't let you get away with sliming John McCain with this flag business. And that's when Donald Trump caved. And the flag came back down to half-mast and will remain at half-mast until next Sunday, apparently, when John McCain will be laid to rest in the cemetery at the United States Naval Academy, which incidentally is in a part of the country, Annapolis, Maryland, that is one of those parts of the country that is threatened by climate change. Probably within, oh, say, 200 years or so, John McCain's and every other grave at the United States Naval Academy will be in date, so to speak, in the mythology and the terminology of the seafaring tradition, in Davy Jones's locker. He's going to be put to rest in the dirt, but here in a couple of hundred years, because of Republican policies that ignore climate change, he will be buried at sea. Which, incidentally, is another mark of the actions of the goddess of irony, because you may or may not recall, but in 2008, John McCain was the last Republican to talk seriously about the need to do anything whatsoever about the threat that climate change poses to the United States. And climate change is, it's a factor in a vast percentage of the lives of the population of the United States because of the number of cities we have that sit on the coast. From my beloved New Orleans, below sea level on the Gulf Coast, to Biloxi and Corpus Christi, Pascagoula, Mobile, Panama City, Destin, Pensacola, formerly the bailiwick of one Joe Scarborough. By the way, Mika was still gone today. We were promised on Friday that Mika would be back this week, but no Mika Monday, no Mika Tuesday. It's getting a little weird. I mean, send out a single ping, Mika. Just let us know that Joe doesn't have you in a pit wearing a Reagan suit. Jesus, the Reagan hagiography has been unbearable during the last few days. It's just, and by the way, Joe's gotten to the point where he cannot mention Donald Trump without referring to him as a lifelong Democrat, as though if he just keeps calling him that enough, people will forget that it's a bunch of Republicans empowering him. But anyway, John McCain's burial. So, in the aftermath of the kerfuffle over the flag and the gross insult that Donald Trump delivered to John McCain, and well, John McCain's dead and his problems are over, so the gross insult was actually delivered to Meghan McCain and Cindy McCain and the rest of the extended McCain family and all of John McCain's friends. That's who got their shoes pissed on by Donald Trump. But lo and behold, yesterday, Senator James Inhofe of Oklahoma, the guy who, speaking of climate change, brought a snowball to the floor of the United States Senate. Well, Jim Inhofe, whom Bart Kopp used to refer to as Pissquick, well, he blamed dead John McCain for the flag being raised to full mast at the White House. No, really. After the kerfuffle had concluded, Inhofe said that frankly, I think that John McCain is partially to blame for that because he's very outspoken. He disagreed with the president in certain areas and wasn't too courteous about it. Huh. How about that? I guess using his magical wizard powers that he got by being in contact with the Kenyan Muslim usurper wizard back in 2008, He caused Donald Trump to slur him and slime him in 2015. Yeah. Having dug himself a nice hole, Inhofe immediately tried to start digging out. We're dealing with a hero when we deal with Senator McCain. He wasn't always the most lovable person to be around, but he was a fighter and never shied away from a good fight. Oh, really? Okay. Got it. So, if that's the case, if a guy who's been in the Senate for 36 years can die, and a member of his own party will jump on to slime him in defense of a traitorous prick in the White House, you can bet that showing him the 72 different camera angles of Donald Trump shooting somebody in the middle of Fifth Avenue would not convince him to convict Donald Trump on a bill of impeachment of same. Any questions? Lindsey Graham, who's out there shucking and jiving for Trump now in regard to Jeff Sessions? No. He wouldn't vote to impeach. Mitch McConnell? No. Cory Gardner? No. How about John Kennedy, who speaks so plainly down in Louisiana? No. And that's what the vote would be. No. How about noted hog D baller Joni Ernst of Iowa? No. Chuck Grassley? No. And once the impeachment once he was acquitted, his approval rating might all get all the way up to 50%. And we would be almost automatically guaranteed a second Trump presidency, which would then be almost guaranteed to be followed by the third Trump presidency with precious Ivanka. And so while I know that it's terribly, terribly in vogue to criticize anyone who says impeachment is off the table, maybe it should be. Unless we're just looking for some sort of Pyrrhic victory. And if we're into Pyrrhic victories, that would be a Pyrrhic victory for the ages. That's true. Ron in Raleigh points out, I keep saying half-mast. At sea, they fly at half-mast. On land, they fly at half-staff. Ron says, more worthless knowledge from my compendium of worthless information. P.S. Folks have suggested that Cindy McCain replace her husband. What the hell, are we in a hereditary aristocracy? I'm of two minds on that. Cindy McCain bears no love for Donald Trump. If you've got somebody who will even consider voting against his pernicious policies, I'm all for it. And let's remember that the Democrat from Missouri killed in a plane crash. Won, even though he was dead. His wife replaced him. And they're temporary appointments. So maybe I'm okay with that. Because the alternatives are a bunch of Lulus and maggots who would immediately run to Washington and stick their heads so far up Donald Trump's ass that you'd be able to see their smiling faces when he yawns. In times like these, you don't get happy choices. Yeah, that was Missouri Governor Mel Carnahan. Thank you. Thank you, Scott. Thank you. James writing in says, I'm sure you've heard John McCain fathered a bastard child during Robert's Rebellion. It just asked the Bush campaign. Damn straight. Randy noted it went from 77 angles down to 72 angles, probably because the FBI confiscated the 5 extra videos. You guys are keeping... That's why I love this program. I ad-lib, and I ad-lib... When I ad-lib numbers, you know, that's like ciphering. But I'm glad you're keeping track. Makes for better continuity. Lee in New York says Donald J. Trump Jr. If Don Jr. thrown under the bus, hell, Trump the dad would jump behind the wheel, run over Jr. himself, and throw it in reverse. I added the throw it in reverse part. He does not know how to drive a bus. He's usually only interested in blowing the horn and pretending to steer. Trump cannot even make a phone call. This must be why he tweets. I'd say. Meanwhile, an update, courtesy of Scott in San Diego, on the plan to rename the Russell Senate office building for John McCain. Well, guess what? There's a GOP backlash. Because, of course, it was Chuck Schumer's idea. Remember, the Russell Senate office building in Washington, D.C., it's the most beautiful of the three Senate office buildings, much as the Cannon building is the most beautiful of the three House buildings. They were built contemporaneously. They were the first House and Senate office buildings. It was named in the way back for a guy named Richard Russell, who was a senator from Georgia, who was a notorious racist and segregationist. And so Chuck Schumer came up with the idea, hey, let's name the Russell building where John McCain had his office the McCain building. I think it's a cute little piece of agitprop. And apparently it has found its target, because now, some of your more white supremacist senators in the GOP Senate caucus are having a hissy. Naturally, it's a senator from Alabama, Richard Shelby. Senator Russell was a well-respected man from the South and up here, too. He was a man of his time. He was a well-respected senator. And he didn't like the idea of pointing out that Richard Russell of Georgia was a notorious segregationist and an unrepentant racist. He said, if you want to get into that, the race stuff, the civil rights stuff, if you want to get into that, you have to get into George Washington and Thomas Jefferson and most of our founding fathers, maybe with the exception of Hamilton. It's easy to prejudge what they should have done. With the exception of Hamilton? That's it? The founding father, John Adams, was a slave owner? Samuel Adams, slave owner? John Hancock, slave owner? Well, he was a smuggler, but... and on and on and on. Slave owners. Most of our founding fathers. Jesus Christ, the stupid. And you know what? We need to get into George Washington's slave owner. Because guess what George Washington did when he died? Freed his slaves. Guess what Thomas Jefferson didn't do when he died? You get the idea. Georgia Senator David Perdue doesn't care for the idea of renaming the Russell Senate office building either. Because Richard Russell was a stalwart of the military. This is a guy who was a giant of the Senate, Perdue said. So this renaming thing because of one issue, you know, is somewhat troubling. The fact that it's been brought into this John McCain thing, I think, is inappropriate. Notice all the voices are coming from the racist South. Bill Cassidy, Louisiana. What I don't want is to establish a precedent so that something named after John McCain is named after somebody else in the future. Right, yeah. Maybe we could put up a statue of Robert E. Lee outside. How about George Wallace or Lester Maddox? Lester Maddox was from Georgia. We probably should put a keep the Richard Russell name on the building and put up a statue of Lester Maddox. Yes, let's do that. Mitch McConnell demurred. The Senate is eager to work on concrete ways to provide a lasting tribute to this American hero long after this week's observances are complete. But they have remained. His office has remained silent on the idea of renaming the Russell Senate Office Building. Because Mitch McConnell is a pretty damn sharp, I hate to admit it, but a sharp politician. And so consequently, he's not going to get tricked into that box by that tricksy Chuck Schumer. But yeah, as Scott points out, the Russell Building was named in 1972, when we should have known better by then. Mm-hmm. And Marty, I think you're right. Wasn't Ted Kennedy's widow also appointed briefly to his seat? I think you may be correct. Until Scott Brown won the special election, I think I recall, yes. Mm-hmm. Larry points out, I bet he's right on the man of his time comment about Richard Russell. Larry says, can we just, besides Texas, just give these fuckers their own country through the South and maybe a lower Midwest state or two? It's either that, brother, or we want them out, but people are getting restless. It'd be better than another civil war. You know what would be better than another civil war? Changing the mindset, slowly but surely. And you know, while I was in New Orleans, I did have the, like I said, while I was there, I had the opportunity to meet a whole bunch of people who are working hard in the South, where to work on issues of progressive politics, liberal politics, race, gender, is to engage in something that is brutally difficult. And I know, I realize that we are a very regionalist country. And, you know, maybe if you're, maybe if you're in a blue state, it's easy to say cut the rest of them loose. But I still ask the question, are you ready to have a wave, because this is just hypothetical, are you ready to have a wave of people, you know, refugees from the states that, I don't know, become Jesus land? Or what about the people who can't be refugees and just have to stay behind the cornpone curtain? You know, people like me. So we're thinking about. Lee in New York says, there's one path to impeachment. It's quite simple. Nixon resigned because his party did not support him. The same is the only way to get Trump out. If the Republican voters turn on Trump, the Republican senators will turn so fast their vision will blur. Right now, the Republican answer to do you support Trump is yes. If the opinion changes to where no is the only acceptable answer, Trump will be gone before you can say cheeseburger. Well, Lee, it would be great if it worked out that way. I don't think it does. I think we're in a different time now. I think we're past the time when a Nixon, you know, and it's weird to say that Nixon did the honorable thing, but the resignation was both honorable and a way for him to cover his ass by reaching a deal with Gerald Ford whereby he would have himself pardoned. Trump can't resign. He simply cannot resign. He has to brazen it out. Because that's what he's famous for. And he does not want to be another Richard Nixon. I mean, at least Nixon is the first president to resign. Who's going to remember the second president to resign? I would suggest that the one thing that has to happen in order to make a Trump resignation at least worthy of consideration is that there's going to have to be a determination, and this will have to come through the court system, not the Congress. There has to be a determination that a sitting president can be indicted. Because then, if Donald Trump is indicted, and he's facing the rest of his natural-born life in prison, like his buddy Paul Manafort, that changes the calculus a little bit. Even if the ruling says, well, yeah, you can indict a sitting president, but the indictment gets held in abeyance until he's no longer president. Well, that provides impetus for him to try to stay president until he dies, which might include, if, you know, the Republican, how about a repeal of presidential term limits? Oh, the doors that open, the doors that open. James in Illinois says, they want another country. This one. They'll put us in those FEMA camps they were so goddamned worried about. The maggots. Yeah, you think they'd be happy giving up California, Washington, Oregon, maybe Minnesota, Wisconsin, Michigan, and the Northeast in exchange for getting to keep Florida and Texas and the rest of the Jesus land states, mostly the Confederate South? No. Remember, the entire efforts of the Koch brothers, the Birchers, all of those right-wing outfits is not to hold what they already have. They remain on the offensive. That's why we've watched Wisconsin with what was once famously referred to as the Wisconsin idea be gradually disassembled and turned into Alabama with good cheese. I said that years and years ago when somebody asked me, why are the Koch brothers going to Wisconsin? And my answer was, because there's no fun in making Alabama and Mississippi weirder. The job's done in Alabama and Mississippi, Tennessee, Arkansas, Louisiana, Kansas, Missouri, Oklahoma. What they want to do is take the rest of the country. And they're making little inroads. They'll take a run at California. They've got weirdos in Oregon and weirdos in Washington. There are weirdos in New York. I worry about the governor's race in New York. The great big oh my God debate between Cynthia Nixon and Andrew Cuomo is tomorrow. And Cynthia Nixon is complaining about the temperature of the studio and saying that she's aggrieved that Andrew Cuomo won't shake her hand. Huh. No, really. The latest story is that Cynthia Nixon is claiming that having the studio air-conditioned at anything below 76 degrees is sexism. Really. And, you know, I'm not just dismissing that. Because, for instance, over the course of 25 years of marriage, well, it didn't even take 25 years. I found out that when I'm comfortable, Agnes is often freezing. Men tending to be bigger also tend to have, I guess, more insulation. I don't know. But Cynthia Nixon says that it's sexism for Andrew Cuomo to try to dictate that the air conditioning, she said, be like a meat locker. Beats me. So, yeah. But I guess the New York primary is on September the 13th, and the the big debate is tomorrow at WCBS, I think. Interesting. And by the way, I would be remiss, I suppose, if I didn't note that today is primary day in, among other places, Florida and Arizona. In Arizona, the primary is kind of weird because of the passing of John McCain and the response of Kelly Ward saying, how dare he have the nerve to die when I'm starting my bus tour, because, of course, I guess with Kelly Ward, it's all about Kelly. So the conventional wisdom is that the nominee will wind up being a Representative McSally, a Republican woman who is thought to at least have the ability to beat the Democratic challenger for the seat that Parthian sharpshooter Jeff Flake is vacating. And then in Florida, I mentioned climate change a little bit ago. That seems to be on people's minds down there. Yeah. You followed the red tide or the thousands of pounds of dead fish that have had to been cleaned up from the red tide. And even in a place as red and white wing and stand your ground and shoot people as Florida, people are looking up saying, this is certainly strange and screwed up. Yeah. I guess for what it's worth, the Florida results will come in before the Arizona results because of the time zone difference. By the way, Kelly Ward, for whom it's all about herself, tweeted, no kidding,
political correctness is cancer.
Did I mention that she's actually a physician, Kelly Ward? Idiot. I know I mentioned that she's from West Virginia, much to our undying shame here. But, hey, at least she took her crazy on the road to Arizona. But she got her D.O. degree. She's not an M.D. She's a D.O. from the osteopathic college at Lewisburg in Greenbrier County, West Virginia, you know, about an hour and a half from here. And she tweeted, political correctness is cancer. Now, she had a whole bunch of characters to deal with. What, 280 characters to deal with? And she didn't say political correctness is a cancer upon our body politic. She didn't say political correctness is like a cancer. No. She said it is cancer. When there are, beyond the death of John McCain, when there are plenty, dare I say thousands, I mean, there's a lot of people in Arizona, of people in that state at this point who are battling and in some case dying from, wait for it, cancer. Really? And she's battling Joe Arpaio for the booger eater vote, which of course is a huge demographic in Arizona, Stan. Lee, a resident of the state of New York, who will presumably be voting in that New York primary, subject line: New York governor primary. Hi, Bob. Cuomo is sane. She's inexperienced. I don't believe New York will choose her. At present, he's around 60% and she's around 30%. When asked about it, Cynthia Nixon said, well, that's because they're not polling the right people, and I'm going to do the same thing Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez did. Except that Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez only had to campaign in a relatively tiny geographic space, whereas Cynthia Nixon has to run in the entire state of New York. You know, all the way over to, like, Buffalo and Rochester and stuff. Almost to, like, Ohio. Maybe by Thorn in the Side Thursday, we'll have some clips from the debate. Yeah, Larry points out, same thing happens in my scenario. I like the windows open and my fiance freezes. So you never know. Ah, well, thank you for the geography hint. Yeah, New York goes almost to Toronto. Okay, that too. Interesting, interesting, interesting. By the way, there's a photograph of Trump out there sitting with his arms crossed, Mussolini style. And with his lips pursed, and he looks like he's either working on his embouchure for playing the tuba, or he's waiting for a big twoop to come out. But among other things, he's decided that Google is aligning against him. Because he is, after all, a jiggling wad of adipose paranoia. Google search results for Trump news shows
only the viewing reporting of fake news media. In other words, they have it rigged for me and others so that almost all stories and news is bad. Republican, conservative, and fair media is shut out. Illegal? Google and others are suppressing voices of conservatives and hiding information and news that is good. Very serious situation. Now, the problem is the algorithms. And no, this is not the Google Appreciation Network. But what he's complaining about is the cleanup of things like Russian bots and the real fake news sites. Things like, oh, how about that? That was a very famous. Remember when the word fake news, the term fake news was coined? Fake news was used to describe spurious news stories that were placed in places like Facebook and then spread around by bots to create the appearance of legitimacy. One of them famously being Pope Francis endorses Donald Trump, which, you know, never even remotely happened. At all. Ever. And that's what fake news originally meant, but Geezer Disgustus took it, twisted it, and turned it into a phrase that means any news he doesn't like. By the way, I want to go back for just a minute. I mentioned the red tide in Florida, and you know, the larger question of things like, oh, climate change and what it's going to do to the rest of the world. I saw a story today that's disturbing and points out the way toward a future that is more than a little bit frightening. In India, right now, there is there's a wave of violence sweeping the subcontinent. That should be at the very least disturbing. You know, we've talked about the so-called incel movement in the United States and its homicidal consequences. Well, among other things, there was another horrifying example of that on the first day of school in a school in Oklahoma last week or so, where a boy stabbed a girl 11 times on the first day of school because she had said she did not want a dating relationship with him. I'm not talking about 18-year-olds. We're talking about middle schoolers to early high school. Just because she said no, he tried to murder her. Well, in India, emboldened by the nationalist Hindu party. Men who outnumber women by an excess of millions have taken to engaging in online harassment and actual real-time violence. And along the way in the story, what we find out is that, India is experiencing something that's being called the Summer of Rage. The Hindu Nationalist Party and Prime Minister Narendra Modi. Modi is a fascist strongman wannabe. And there are 37 million more men than there are women in India because the inherent sexism of that culture prefers the birth of little boy babies, never thinking really that you need some little girl babies to produce the little boy babies of the next generation. So in a vastly overpopulated country like India, to have 37 million more men than women is to have a ticking time bomb. Combining India and China together, China also with a preference for the birth of boys, taking them together, there are 50 million excess males who are, get this, under age 20. And excess males is a disturbing phrase all by itself. But these are men who, within the cultural strictures of their countries, probably aren't going to get married. At least not within the contemporary meaning of the word. We're also talking about countries where being gay can get you real dead real fast. And at the same time, you combine it with a sexist culture where women can be killed for perceptions of impurity. And as Larry notes, this is serious shit. Yes, it is. What happens when you've got a bunch of excess guys? What happens when you've got a bunch of excess testosterone wandering around out there? Well, in the case of the Summer of Rage in India, it results in enforced codes of female modesty. It results in attacks on interfaith couples, attacks on Muslims, you know, because there one guy is allowed to marry multiple women and there aren't enough women to begin with. Well, it's got... there are reverberations, like I said, among the so-called incels here in involuntary celibates here in the United States. The publication Pacific Standard did a story. But they note that even though it looks like the alt-right may have fizzled and made a laughingstock of themselves at their Unite the Right rally 2 in Washington, D.C., where they were outnumbered by, you know, not just people opposing them, but by the people covering the rally, that they're still organizing. The report from Pacific Standard states, in 2017, neo-Nazi and affiliated militia groups went through specialty military training in rural parts of America.
with expertise flown in from places like Germany and Scandinavia, where neo-Nazi activities date back to at least the 1970s, they discussed the new political environment frothing in countries from Austria to the United States on account of an insurgent alt-right. They wore fatigues, practiced shooting and mob control, and generally bonded through their shared experiences, values, and worldviews. They aren't gone, and they aren't going away. It's on the rise, even in what we used to recognize as a liberal democracy like Germany, where in two different cities there have been significant scandals over the police trying to keep media from covering right-wing neo-fascist, let's call them what they are, Nazis, when they rally. Police using their police powers to keep the light, the cleansing light, from striking the Nazis. And in one instance, you know, they were sitting around giving, you know, the Nazis stiff arm salute to each other. This is going on all around the country. All over Germany. It's also going on all over Europe. It's going on in the United States. And then when I read this report about what's going on in India and China, I mean, part of the reason that brutally overpopulated China changed from its one-child policy to its okay-you-can-have-two-babies policy was because the Chinese were killing the little girl babies because they wanted a son. And ancient principles like primogeniture reach their dead and bony hands from the ignorant past into all the way past the present and into the future. If you've got 50 million excess males with nothing better to do, hey, let's have a war. We can overrun them. One guy interviewed in India said, there's a saying, behind every successful man is a woman, but you don't need women. You can leave them behind and achieve success in life. There was a story that was suppressed by the Chinese government recently, and no, this has nothing to do with the monkey jellyfish hybrids that you might hear on Alex Jones. But a story came out and was suppressed by the Chinese government about sex doll rentals. I read it and immediately thought about, well, I just wondered if Trump has one. Because yesterday when they were asking Trump, do you have anything to say about John McCain, sir? What about John McCain? And he just sat there looking like a very pissed off baby. Full pout, arms crossed across his, the same picture I was talking about earlier. Also, in the camera frame was melanoma. This is radio. If we were doing video, I'd just play the clip and you could see it because we're just going to have to describe it. It's kind of like the Hindenburg disaster on radio. Besides, it's 84 degrees in here, and it's naked radio here. The horror. But melanoma tries to force on that I'm a well-trained model and courtesan smile and fails. It's the damnedest thing. You remember the look on her face at the inaugural luncheon back on January 20th, 2017, when Julius Geezer and Melanoma were sitting there next to each other, looking like they were two people miserable to be together, and would be miserable under any circumstance on earth, but were particularly miserable in that one. Remember all the stories about her refusing to let him take her hand? Well, this tops all of those. She literally looks like she has to just gear down all the way to her core and pull herself together because she's about to burst into tears. Of course, this is also coincidental in time with the release of, and see, this is, you know, Trump's,
no, baby, no, I didn't have sex with those Playboy, with that Playboy model, and I didn't have sex with Stormy Daniels. I just paid them off because they were going to say I did, and it was going to hurt us all. That's why I paid them off. I just wanted the stories to go away. I would even though I cheated on my first wife with my second wife, and even though I cheated on my second wife with you, I would never cheat on you, baby. Baby, you're the best. And she bought it. She needed to buy it. But the story came out where Stormy Daniels said it would be charitable to say that he lasted 2 minutes. And in that instant, Melanoma knew that it was all true. And so we've got tens of millions of young fighting age males who can't get laid. Some of whom in China are renting sex dolls. The company doing the renting promises that they've been thoroughly cleaned after each rental. Well, I'm convinced. And we've got a president who could start a war on a whim. And in the meantime, you've got people all over the world who want what this country has had for a very long time. And you find thought-provoking stuff in the damnedest places. Sometimes you travel in time to find it. I read the story about the Summer of Rage in proto-fascist India, and I was reminded of something that came from all the way back in 1971. Divide everything into 200 million equal parts. Everything in this country that is fabricated. Steel mills, speedboats, cross-country power lines, scalpels, watch bands, fish rods, ski poles, plywood, storage batteries, everything. Break it down into basic raw materials and then compute the power requirements and the fossil fuels. Now, this is 1971, and that's why 200 million people in the United States in 1971. Break it down into basic raw materials and then compute the power requirements and the fossil fuels needed to make everybody's share in this country. Know what happens if you apply that formula to all the peoples of all the other nations of the world? You come up against a bleak fact. There is not enough material on and in the planet to ever give them what we're used to. The emerging nations are not going to emerge, not into our pattern at least, not ever. We've hogged it all. Technology won't come up with a way to crowd the Yangtze River with speedboats. It was okay when the world couldn't see us consuming and consuming, or hear us. Or taste some of our wares. But communication by cinema, satellite, radio, television, tape, these have been like light coming on, slowly being turned up, like on a rheostat control in a dark cellar where all of mankind used to live. Now it's blinding bright, cruelly bright. And they can all look over into our corner and see us gorging ourselves and playing with our bright, pretty toys
And so they want theirs now. Just like ours, God help them. And what's the only thing we can say? Sorry, you're a little too late. We used it all up. All except what we need to keep our toys in repair and running and to replace them when they wear out. Sorry, but that's the way it is. What comes after that? Barbarism, an interregnum, a new Dark Ages, and another start 1,000 years from now with a few million people on the planet? Our myth has been that our standard of living would become available to all the peoples of the world. Myths wear thin. We have a visceral appreciation of the truth. That truth, which we don't dare announce to the world, is what gives us the guilt and the shame and the despair. Nobody in the world will ever live as well materially as we once did. And now, as our materialism begins to sicken us, it is precisely what the emerging nations want for themselves and can never have. Brazil might manage it, but no one else. Interesting little economic treatise from 1971, isn't it? It's not entirely true, but it's close, and it's close enough to have a sort of harmonic resonance. We're told about the emerging middle class in China and how every emerging middle class family in China wants a car when there's no room for cars for everybody in China, just like speedboats on the Yangtze. That middle class exists in Flavio's Brazil, alongside the favelas, for which there is no remedy whatsoever. And 50 million male human beings under 20 between India and China. Well, they don't get to participate. Oh, sure, maybe they can get a job. Maybe they can even get a good job. Maybe they can have a good middle class so-called life. But they can't get married. And they can't have a family in a culture, in two cultures, where the absolute cornerstone of society is the family. That becomes more than a little bit terrifying. And eventually, the threat, the risk is that the rest of the world, in seeing what we have and have had and what they want and can't have, well, what's the line? What comes after that? Barbarism, an interregnum, a new Dark Ages, and another start 1,000 years from now with a few million people on the planet? Because taken outside of everything else is climate change. And even we who have done all of this, who have had all of that, well, we've also shat in our nest to have it. And so desperate governments, and make no mistake, the government of the People's Republic of China is desperate. That's why they're putting up solar panels for all they're worth and wind turbines for all they're worth to try to alleviate the pollution and toxins that are choking their country to death and serves as an existential crisis alongside the ramping feedback loop of climate change. Well, that's why they've built their own social media networks. That's why there's a lot of glitz and neon and blinking lights. That's why they consume these little handheld pocket devices faster than just about anybody else on the planet.
to hide the very grim reality that's in front, that they know is in front of their citizenry's very eyes. And it's frightening. And it's a biological thing too. You know, while I was traveling, I stayed a couple of nights with my sister and brother-in-law, and they've got a lot of greenery around their house. That's a subtropical zone down there on the Gulf Coast. And there were these great big goddamn, they're called golden orb web spiders, but the folks around there just colloquially call them banana spiders, I guess because of the yellow color on their bodies. One of them had gotten as big as the palm of my hand. I had a dispatch from my sister a week or so ago telling me that Darwin had caught up with the spider because when they came back from traveling, there was a great big hole in the web and the spider was gone. Something bigger than the spider got the spider and apparently found it tasty. A couple of them, as a matter of fact. But the interesting thing about that web was that great big spider was in there, and she was a she. And way off on the other side of the web was this little tiny banana spider that was the male. And because I'm a curious soul, I read up on the banana spider, and yes, as is so often the case in the arachnid world, eventually the boy spider will come over curiously and, driven by biological urges, decide that he just can't live without the female spider. And if she's in the mood, they'll mate, and then she'll eat him. Because having mated, he's fulfilled his biological destiny. I was up at the Wiggling Pig earlier today, and I heard a shriek from the front of the store. And it was one of the women who works there. And she and one of the guys who worked there were shooing a great big praying mantis out of the building. And the guy looked at me and said, "Yeah, he was a big 'un." I said, "That was a she. The males are little. Because as soon as they're done mating, she turns around and bites his head off. Because he's fulfilled his biological destiny." I'm a real party, just, you know, talking to folks. But in the vast majority of the natural world, males aren't that useful. So evolutionarily speaking, we've tried to make ourselves useful.
I'll go out. I'll poke mastodon with big stick. Bring back mastodon steak. Woman cook.
And there's a sociological and anthropological school of thought that says that, you know, originally things ran on matriarchal terms. And the key to that was keeping down the male population. And that the rise of the patriarchy is a resistance to the biologically enforced obsolescence of males in any given generation. Because when you get an excess of males, you get an excess of trouble. Just talking about Darwin, just talking about biology, just talking about evolution. And, you know, I'm not going to sit here and have a hissy about it. It just is what it is. But it has been the fundamental problem of humanity down through the ages. Look at the one fact that we know predicts success in any given society. I mean, this has been tested to death. It should just about be classified as a law of nature. If you want to predict whether a culture or a society will be successful and sustainable, you can do it by looking at one single factor. And that one single factor is the access of women to reproductive choice. When women have no access to reproductive choice, you get miserable nations. You get nations in constant upheaval. You get nations that are warlike and prone to getting in trouble both inside and outside their own borders. You get powder kegs. In cultural groups and societies where women have access to reproductive choice, the exact opposite is the case. Families are smaller. Women are happier. They aren't bred to death, literally. And those smaller families tend to be more highly educated. And the demographic breakout is, as you know, is within evolutionary limits. And the cultures are sustainable. The native peoples of this continent before the arrival of white people maintained a very, very close guard on population growth. And in the places where they did not, the populations collapsed. You can see it time after time after time, in conjunction with what happens to the climate, in conjunction with things like drought. You can see populations arise and collapse. By the time the Mexica were at the top of the heap in the Valley of Mexico, you'd had the Olmecs and the Toltecs and the Maya further south, each one of which had collapsed in succession. Is there a conclusion to be drawn from all of this? Yeah, I think there is. We are in bigger trouble from a species standpoint than we have any idea of even being able to comprehend or express. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid, a little ray of fucking sunshine. But I try to be mindful of this stuff. I have to be mindful of this stuff. Because otherwise, I'm just stumbling along with the rest of the world on the way to perdition. I mean, look at the millions who were slaughtered in the First and Second World War. Not just combatants, but non-combatants and civilians. And we came back with a vengeance. And for instance, the term we use to describe one demographic in this country refers to a population explosion after the end of the Second World War, the baby boom. So, at least by being aware of it, we have a chance. But the other side of the coin is that fascist movements don't arise on the grief and the angst and the outrage of women. Fascist movements arise on the fury of disaffected men. And that disaffection can boil over anywhere on the planet. Right now, it's at a boil in India. And a fascistic government is providing the fuel, the flame, under the pot. China is doing its dead level best to keep it tamped down, but it has to use brutal, ham-handed, ham-fisted tactics to do it. And yeah, make no mistake, fascist movements do like their women. Marine Le Pen, as Larry mentions, for one. There's a whole cadre of fascist broadcasters in a group called, let me find it here. Hold on. Well, damn it. I had her. I had her queued up at one point in time. Oh, there she is. She's on the radio. She's, of course, pretty and white and blonde. And her name is Lana Lochteff. And she broadcasts from a well-funded radio site called Red Ice. And she's preaching ethno-nationalism. And within that ethno-nationalism, she preaches white supermajorities and discrimination against people based on the color of their skin. And her goal is to recruit women who would otherwise not be inclined toward fascism into her fascist movement. Take a moment.
Simply means a country of European people whose immigration policy ensures that their ethnicity remains the majority.
We missed the first couple of words there. I'm going to back up. See, she's perky. Doesn't she have just a perky little voice? But wait till you hear the hate that she preaches.
This concept of a white ethnostate simply means a country of European people whose immigration policy ensures that their ethnicity remains the majority. Yes, folks, European people are ethnic too. It's not just a term to describe non-white spiciness. Swedish, German, Icelandic, Estonian, these are examples of European ethnicities, also known as people of the white race. But they haven't needed to call themselves ethno-nationalists or an ethno-state because it's stating the obvious. Their nation is made up of people sharing the same ethnicity. They just call themselves a nation, a country, and there can be many flavors of European nationalism. They also don't call themselves white nationalists because they are not a generic white. They are a unique and different ethnicity. They are Finns, Celts, Spaniards, Slavs, Anglos, and so on. And I'd add that before European nations as we know them today existed, we even had more European diversity as the European continent consisted of thousands of interesting European tribes with unique languages and culture.
Now that little passage sort of grabbed me. Because what she's talking about is Europe before, in many instances, Europe before the Peace of Westphalia and the Treaty of Osnabrück. that established the idea of the modern nation state. And I've been watching this for a few years now. This right-wing driven pushback against the idea of melting pot states, where you might have, say, some Serbians and some ethnic Albanians and Macedonians in one nation. And we've seen it shatter, and we've seen the horror and the bloodshed that came out of the shattering. Well, make no mistake, that's what fascism wanted. Fascism, there's a reason that one of the fascist movements in the United States is called Identity Evropa. They use the V where the U is because, never mind, because, you know, stupid. Identity Europa. The identitarian movement. Because, see, if you can do that, then it makes it easier to hate somebody else. It makes it easier to kill someone else. To commit genocide against someone else. Now, the funny thing about this this cheerleader for genocide and racism, Lena Lochteff, she knows nothing. She knows nothing of human prehistory. She doesn't know that her ancestors were, to coin a phrase, black as the ace of spades 7,000 years ago. Once you start talking about Europe before 5,000 BCE, you're talking about people with extremely dark skin color. It's a fact. The people who went into the caves and made those brilliant paintings in Altamira and all over Ice Age-ish Europe, black folks, brown folks. Yeah. It's not a theory. It's pretty much genetically proven. Roman Britain was a melting pot. The Britons of pre-Rome have the genetics of the Levant and Syria in their mitochondrial DNA. So what she's preaching is actually a sort of scientific heresy, non-facts. Red Ice was kind of new to me, but Larry's telling me, oh yeah, I'm familiar with him. Hung Like Jesus says, I'm well aware of Red Ice, and believe it or not, Red Ice was a site all about UFOs and the like, and it comes out of Sweden. I'll be damned. Alexander commenting along the way. He suggested she is odiously stupid because a mighty sorry excuse of a woman treated with zero regard with the worth of a POS by her own white male counterparts, just as they do any and all people of color. She's lost her goddamn mind. She's preaching hatred of herself, but she's too effing stupid to see that. Larry says, years ago I realized it was coast-to-coast alt-right bullshit. Brother Deacon Asa says, yep, like I said, there he goes again, talking about the ancients on a Titanic Tuesday. Thanks, Killjoy Kincaid. I'm I was deeply influenced a couple of years back by that essay. I think it was in The Guardian, by the guy who talked about world conflagrations being started by tiny things. That they don't generally come from grand moments. And this feels like that. Feels a lot like that. Now, let's check in with Lana again for a minute or two as she tries to explain white people to us.
Even more distinct than now. I'd actually prefer that than what we have now. Today, there are around 87 or so European ethnicities in Europe alone. Others argue that the colonies, Australia, Canada, America, New Zealand, South Africa, became their own European ethnicity over time, as they left Europe, remained separate, and formed their own culture and even physical look through time. However, within these countries are plenty of Europeans who retained their ethnic roots, German, Dutch, English, French, etc. And these colonies, too, were ethnostates until...
Yeah, that's true. I walk around, you know, when I'm not doing the naked radio, I walk around wearing my kilt. Stupid.
And see, this is where I have to rise up against my own my own biases, because I want to use a gender-based slur, but I'm not going to do that because, well, I'm trying to be a better person. Yeah. Yeah, Marty says, let me guess, this one's a Christian. Well, of course. Of course. Well, I don't know. She may go in for Odin and Thor and Loki. That's really big with these freaks, too. Lana is the wife of Henrik Palmgren, a Swedish white nationalist political podcaster, vlogger, and YouTube personality who founded Red Ice in 2003. Yeah, birds of a feather fucked together. Larry confirming what Flavio said. Randy in PA says, I hear it's at a boil in Poland. Well, remember when they brought their Confederate flags to the Trump rally? Well, a year ago. Because in Europe, where you can't fly the Nazi flag, they fly the Confederate flag instead because it's not illegal and everybody understands that the two things stand for the same goddamn filthy thing. Brian says, Bob, China has an emerging middle class because they have our jobs. Well, that's true, too. But it is a sham emerging middle class. Because try as they might, they can't engage in the kind of consumption that we did when the resources were plentiful. Because they're not plentiful anymore. Scott in San Diego, Red Ice Lady. Lana's sing-songy vocal characteristics are vaguely Sarah Palinian. Ron and Raleigh, come on, Bob. Stop trying to be a better person, Bob. Slur away. No, because I can't spend the rest of the night answering emails from people saying, oh, God damn it, I'm never going to listen again. You called her a weep. It is bad enough simply to say that she is a full-on traitor to any idea of civilization that humanity ever had. Yeah. On the other hand, the historical revisionism is well underway. Let's check in with Lance Wall now, shall we? Wasn't he the one that was fantasizing with... No, well, I can't remember. Let's check in with Lance Wall now You might be surprised at what never existed.
What do you think happened this weekend in Washington? That was sheer manipulated news cycles.
He's talking about the failure of the Unite the Right 2 rally.
We had this white supremacist thing, white supremacy, white. There is no white supremacist movement in the United States, and the proof of it is only 24 people showed up.
Right. That's right.
Yeah, there never was. Yeah. By the way, there never was a white supremacist movement in the United States. Mm. And if you want to really drive Democrats crazy.
So there was never a white supremacist movement. So those hundreds of thousands of robed, hood-wearing Klansmen marching down Pennsylvania Avenue in Washington, D.C. back in the early 20th century, that was what? Photoshopped by the aliens? Right? Bueller? And listen to the white people just clap and clap. There never was any such thing as white supremacy. There was never a step-off rule. There was never an eyeball rule. Nobody was ever lynched.
KKK and Jim Crow laws did have a history in the United States.
Oh!
But they were all in Democratic states. Not a single Republican state. So what does that tell you? That tells you that a makeover's been done politically so that the Republicans and the Christians are being smeared by a spirit of Leviathan to look as though they're the right-wing extremists. So unite the right.
Oh, so they only look like that. There hasn't been a wholesale change in the Republican Party. The Southern strategy employed by Richard Nixon never happened in 1968. LBJ just made it up when he said that after signing the Civil Rights Act and the Voting Rights Act into law, that we're going to lose the South for a generation. None of that really happened. See, this is what happens when you give simple answers to simple people. And they are simple. This is what happens when it's impossible to simply explain to a bunch of simpletons the evolution of the Republican Party from the rise of Lincoln and a Republican Party that was fractured even then between people who wanted to preserve the Union and people who wanted to preserve their racism at the same time and the ship 'em back to Africa movement. Now, there's just too goddamn much nuance there. There's no time on the Jim Baker show to explain to that group of mouth breathers and knuckle walkers about the nomination of Garfield as the Republican presidential nominee in the late 19th century, who was elected on a promise of fulfilling the dream of Lincoln and reaching some sort of racial parity and civil rights in the country. Of course, he was murdered. He was shot, and then he was murdered by his doctors. You can't explain that to these people who are simple enough to buy bucket pudding. And so you just say that there's a vast conspiracy out there to try to make the Republicans the bad guys. Yes, Alabama was a Democratic state. So was Mississippi. So was Georgia. So was Tennessee. And it took a while after LBJ said we're going to lose the South for a generation. But I remember when Guy Hunt became the first Republican elected governor of Alabama in a century. And he was not elected on a civil rights platform. He was elected on a Reagan-esque platform. And he was a preacher from Holly Pond, Alabama, and promptly used the resources of the state to promote his goddamned evangelical ministry. No shit. And there wasn't an iota of civil rights about him. And then the legislatures began falling. The latest one being the fall of the North Carolina legislature and the fall of the Kentucky legislature. But you can't explain that To people who think that women have it bad because one woman talked to a snake one time. And so there was never a white supremacist movement, but there was a white supremacist movement in Democratic-controlled states. Perfect, makes perfect sense to me, doesn't it to you? Tracy with an email. Subject line, gender slur, the one you don't want to use. Do you mean see you next Tuesday? Love and kisses, Tracy. I'm going to say no. Because I have to go to sleep at night. And I love my wife. Garfield, says Scott in San Diego. Wait, the Republicans nominated an orange lasagna-loving cat as their standard bearer? Yes, it's a little-known fact that Donald Trump was not the first orange president from the Republican Party. It was James Garfield. Yep, no. And then there's this. Brother Deacon Asa sent it to me, as did Mark down in Florida. It's a mite harrowing, but it fits into the overall theme. That Hindu National Party that's getting all uppity and violent in India. You know, it's religious driven, or religion at the very least is used as an enabling tool. Via the New York Daily News headline. Trump privately warned Christian leaders violence will erupt if GOP loses in midterms, falsely said he repealed a law. Chris Sommerfeld writing at the Daily News. Good Lord. President Trump told evangelical leaders during a closed-door White House meeting Monday that mass violence would break out if Republicans lose the upcoming congressional midterms, according to audio recordings. Oh, well, he's on tape again? Fake news. He also told the conservative Christians falsely that he had repealed a campaign finance law that prohibits politicking from the pulpit. NBC News got the tape in which Trump said, "You're one election away from losing everything that you've got. Violent people to overturn everything that we've done, and they'll do it quickly and violently. There's violence. When you look at Antifa and you look at some of these groups, these are violent people." And one of the things I'm most proud of is getting rid of the Johnson Amendment. That was a disaster for you. It made you keep your Johnsons in your pants. No, I added that last part. We got to laugh somewhere along the way, damn it. I take no pride and I take no joy. Okay, a little bit of pride. In the fact that I've been predicting this shit for years. That I've been saying that there is a rise of fascism and that it is, in fact, wrapped in a flag and with a cross on its shoulder and toting a Bible. And isn't it going to be fun when the tens of millions of disaffected fascists in India decide to go after the religious maniacs in Pakistan? Hey, they got nuclear weapons. Cool. Or maybe the disaffected in China will be put to use going after the disaffected in India. Hey, they got nuclear weapons. Cool. And meanwhile, I will mention again that, yes, the Saudis are looking to chop the heads off of 5 human rights activists, while the Trump administration says, huh? Israel Gom Gom, we don't know if she's dead yet or not. We don't know if she's had her head chopped off or not yet.
If they do it, she'll be the first female human rights activist to be executed in Saudi Arabia. Well, maybe the Guinness Book of World Records will show up for that. What did Isra al-Ghomgham do? In her own words, she defended human rights and did so using social media and Twitter, and like Twitter and Facebook. They're also charging me, she says, for creating a YouTube account. Expression of peaceful opinion is not a capital crime. They want to chop her head off because of participating in protests in the Qatif region, chanting slogans hostile to the regime, attempting to inflame public opinion. None of these things are actually crimes. But, you know, last week we had the freak in Alabama speaking in tongues and warning about witches and ginning his flock up into a white, and I do mean white hot fury. Apparently they had no problem, as Larry reminds us, with Trump doing the sword dance and pouring ketchup all over his steak there in Saudi Arabia and kissing men.
Well, sometimes you just gotta kiss a guy. Happened to me one time in the Kmart parking lot. He's just so cute.
But now we got the Johnson Amendment repealed, and I don't have to worry about that anymore. So he's got them all ginned up now. And he's given them an excuse to go out and start murdering people if they don't get their way in an election. I don't know about you, but that gives me the shakes. Thanks for sending the story along, Sparky and Mark and Brother Deacon Asa. As Barkway points out in the chat room, a lot of these white hooded dudes also called themselves Christians. They are the Christian Knights of the Ku Klux Klan. And what we have before us is a recipe for world freaking war. And it will come from something minuscule, something tiny. And no amount of access to little handheld pocket computers is going to make people less warlike, because they're already using them as weapons in the first place to torment women online. Classy Todd says, subject line, Mr. Hond, these are the folks who tout the virtues of homeschooling. Therefore, they should enjoy a visit from Mr. Hond so that they can be truly educated in the illusion that they enjoy. This is how they operate in a delusional world like reality TV. They want to make their own reality. Congratulations on not calling that woman a stupid. Oh, you almost got me! It's a good thing I can read ahead faster than I speak. Barkway says, I cannot fathom why the U.S. is so cozy with Saudi Arabia, or why they were voted onto the UN Human Rights Council. One, oil. Two, money. They get the money from the oil. And then we're the biggest arms manufacturer on Earth, and they've got a lot of money, and they want to buy a lot of arms. So we're very cozy. The business of America is business, said a famous Republican president, whose nickname was Silent Cal. Pity he didn't stay a little more silent.
Ron and Raleigh says, these people want desperately to believe they're not racist. Just because they believe white people are superior to everyone else doesn't mean they're white supremacist. I wonder what they call themselves. We have a thousand-year right going on here. Yeah, we do. Or the makings of one. But Lord, when the Hindus start getting it on with the Muslims, and the Muslims start getting it on with the Jews, and the Jews start getting it on the Israelis start getting it on, when the Hindus in India start getting it on with the Muslims in, say, Pakistan, and Iran, and Saudi gets it on with Iran because they taste great versus less filling, and then somebody lobs a missile at Israel, and Israel lobs missiles at somebody else, and then we're going to come in on the side of the Israelis and the Saudis at the same time. The Chinese are not going to like that, and the Russians are going to either sit back and go, well, we'll just take over when the smoke clears, or else they're going to say, we're not going to miss out on the fucking fun. You get the idea. Maybe I was in the sun too long today. But all this stuff just seemed to fold in on itself. And it's more than a little bit frightening. Maybe. Or maybe everything's just okay. Yeah, maybe, you know, red tides happen in the Gulf of Mexico because red tides happen in the Gulf of Mexico because they do. I've seen them. They usually don't wind up with tens of thousands of fish to be cleaned up and basically sterilized ocean thereafter. Everything's dead. And maybe the Christians will remember that they serve the Prince of Peace and not the Prince of War. And, you know, maybe... maybe. I'm not doing a very good job convincing myself. Am I convincing you? I didn't think so. Hey, you know what? Let's take a break. I have filibobstered for 2 hours and 30 minutes. I didn't even realize I was doing it. I apologize. I think. I apologize. It's Tuesday. We've got the Green News Report. I'm sure Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen will have something happy to tell us. Won't they? We'll find out. But anyway, I've filibobstered for 2.5 hours. Anybody want to talk? Anybody want to do the conversation part of conversation radio? We got two phone numbers now, and I think they both work. 304-640-2829. 304-574-8178. That's also the Skype line. That's also the line that the toll-free comes in on, 844-843-4676. If you want to try, if you want to engage in some conversation, jump right in, I guess. Well, thank you. Larry says, doing a great show, man. Well, I appreciate that. But he says, yeah, it's scary as fuck. Glad I'm not the only one. But in about a half an hour, I'm going to give myself a treat because I'm going to pretend that everything's okay. And I'm going to go to the freezer, and I'm going to get out one of those little tiny single-serving cups of Häagen-Dazs vanilla ice cream because I allow myself one of those once a day. And I'm going to have it with something that I recently discovered up at the Wiggling Pig, which means you can probably find it too. Of course, I have no idea how much Roundup's in it. Jesus, Bob, can't you at least talk about ice cream without it? No. There's no nitrates or nitrites in it. There's no high fructose corn syrup in it. It's new from Smucker's. I'm sure they're an evil corporate behemoth that's owned by a larger evil corporate behemoth. But until I get around to being able to make my own, you know, I'm stuck. New from Smucker's, fruit and honey. Naturally sweetened with honey. Ingredients, yep, strawberries, honey. Those are the first two. So it's strawberry jalapeno. And it's got a nice little jalapeno kick to it. And I'm going to have it with my my Häagen-Dazs vanilla. Because, of course, it's from Belgium. And Häagen-Dazs is in Belgium. Yes. It's like a cool breeze, that those funny little moments. No, no, really, it's from Belgium. And that word, that's in Belgium, I know. Oh, don't start, Larry. Bob, frozen yogurt's much better for you and tastes better. Stop telling me how to eat. Stop telling me how to enjoy my evening treat. Bob. And besides, there's nothing in the Häagen-Dazs vanilla except milk, cream, sugar, and vanilla. There's no guar gum. No locust bean gum. No stabilizers or emulsifiers. It is what it is. So I'm gonna. That's my little treat coming up in about a half an hour. But right now, let's see what kind of happy news Brad and Desi have for us, shall we? Do let's. This is Conversation Radio. Sometimes when I'm not filibobstering the whole damn program away, this is the horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. Fundraising free radio brought to you by the subscribers to the horn. We'll be back.
It's Tuesday, August 28, 2018.
Torrential rain has been relentless for nearly 5 days, dousing the Big Island with more than 51 inches.
Hawaii dodges a direct hit from record-breaking Hurricane Lane, but receives a warning about global warming. Australia's conservative prime minister ousted over climate policies, plus...
The facts of global warming demand our urgent attention, especially in Washington.
The complicated climate legacy of Senator John McCain.
All of those complications and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
In the years ahead, we're likely to see reduced water supplies, more forest fires, changes in crop production, more heat waves, and a greater intensity in storms.
Wow, John McCain, 10 years ago. Too bad his colleagues didn't pay attention. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, I think we have good news, sort of, concerning Hurricane Lane and Hawaii.
Well, it's good news and maybe a little bad news as well. Hawaii did dodge a direct hit over the weekend from now Tropical Storm Lane, which is now tracking back out to sea after skirting the islands and dumping historic levels of rain that triggered widespread flooding across the island chain. Many high water rescues, but thankfully no reported deaths. Lane delivered more than 51 inches of rain. That is more than 4 feet, catapulting it into the record books as the third highest rainfall total for a tropical storm or hurricane in the United States since record keeping began nearly 70 years ago.
Wow.
And it hit 1 year to the day after Hurricane Harvey broke the all-time high rainfall record for the U.S.
Well, the hits keep on coming.
Yes, having two of the top three all-time most extreme rainstorms from hurricanes occurring in just the past 2 years is consistent with what scientists expect from a warming climate. Hurricane Lane also brought a warning for Hawaii. Lane was only the second Category 5 storm in recorded history to pass so near to the state, but a recent study from MIT and the University of Colorado Boulder projects that due to global warming, increasing ocean temperatures, the most intense tropical storms near Hawaii are now predicted to increase in frequency by about 15% per decade. But the researchers also said, quote, we can cut that increase roughly in half by reducing our fossil fuel emissions.
But as long as we don't reduce our fossil fuel emissions, the oceans will continue to warm, these storms will continue to get more frequent, and most notably, more intense.
Indeed they will. Reducing emissions will not be happening anytime soon in Australia.
Sorry, mate.
That's the world's biggest coal exporter. Conservative Australian Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull was ousted from office on Friday by his right-wing climate science denier members of his own party after he attempted to set modest targets for reducing the nation's carbon emissions.
Well, that'll teach him.
Former Liberal Australian Prime Minister Kevin Rudd, in a scathing editorial in the Sydney Morning Herald, however, also blamed Australian media, specifically Rupert Murdoch, owner of Sky News in the UK and Australia, and Fox News Channel here in the US. He accused Rupert Murdoch of using his control of Australian media to drum Turnbull out of office and block any action on climate change, calling Murdoch, quote, a cancer eating at the heart of Australian democracy.
So it's not just Americans being played for suckers by Rupert Murdoch.
Nope. Australia is also fighting an outbreak of winter wildfires, and the province of New South Wales, which supplies a quarter of Australia's agricultural output, is officially in 100% drought amid the deepest drought in more than 50 years.
So all of these things, worsening storms, worsening wildfires, worsening droughts, were all things that John McCain, the 2008 Republican presidential candidate, warned us about 10 years ago. Before forgetting all about it.
Exactly. That brings us to Republican Senator John McCain of Arizona, who passed away over the weekend. Whatever you think of his complicated legacy, we just want to note for the record that Senator McCain was the last Republican leader to push for U.S. action on climate change. In 2003 and 2005, McCain sponsored groundbreaking national cap-and-trade legislation. In 2008, as the Republican presidential nominee, McCain laid out a detailed cap-and-trade policy to curb carbon emissions and fight climate change.
The facts of global warming demand our urgent attention, especially in Washington. Good stewardship, prudence, and simple common sense demand that we act to meet the challenge and act quickly.
However, after he lost the 2008 election to President Barack Obama, McCain abandoned his climate leadership role and in 2010 refused to support new cap-and-trade climate legislation in the Senate. So, literally, 2008 was the last time the Republican Party supported any real action to curb climate change.
Even John McCain's vice presidential nominee, Sarah Palin, wanted to do something about climate change as well.
How quickly things change.
Those were the days. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Those were the days, my friend. We thought they'd never end. We'd sing and dance.
All better now. Let's see here. We've got, this is cool. We got two people on hold. Let's run up to Fitzwalker Stand. By the way, we met the Trash Fitzwalker Stand Challenge. Hallelujah glory. So thank you everybody who made that possible. And, let's see. Hey, Wisconsin, what's happening?
This is Samson.
Hey, Samson, how are you?
Not too bad. I'm kind of nervous because I never talk to anybody on the radio. But
you're doing fine. It's just us. Nobody's listening. Okay.
Okay. Well, that was my thought is that all we've been talking about lately is I'm old enough to remember when Jimmy Carter warned us about most of this stuff that's going on right now. I mean, he was talking about climate change and any number of things. And then all of a sudden, all you could hear about is the revolution in Iran. That might not be an exact order, but that's still, that's what I remember.
No, I think that's close enough for government work. I think you're right. And then along came the media did a number on him, naming one of his speeches the malaise speech. Now, the word malaise didn't exist anywhere within that speech. But
no.
But the for-profit media decided to hang that albatross around Jimmy Carter's neck.
Well, he was too generous to people, and he actually knew what the heck it meant to be a good person. He wasn't as much of a politician as what you find now, but he was also smarter than most of the people I see around now.
Well, you know what? He's smarter than he's certainly smarter than 1, 2, 3, 4 out of the last 6 presidents at the very least, and he may be smarter than Clinton, and he may be smarter than Barack Obama. I mean, remember, this guy was literally a nuclear scientist. He's the last scientist and one of the few that, if any, that we've had in the White House, Samson.
Yeah, that's true, and he come up with this thing that he was a born again Christian. All of a sudden, it seemed like all the Republicans really perverted the heck out of that.
I remember the Playboy interview. That was back when I was sneaking views of Playboy, but even then I read the articles. And the lust in the heart business and. But to the extent there will be humans around to write history, history will be much kinder to Jimmy Carter than it will be to that greasy-headed old B-movie actor.
Oh, my. Yeah. Well, I mean, but one thing Reagan did do, he did set up the template for another entertainer to come into the presidency in 2016.
Oh, without a doubt. Even though the Republican Party of today wouldn't pee on Ronald Reagan if he was on fire because he was too liberal for him, that's not a comment on the liberality of Ronald Reagan. That's a commentary on the fascism of the modern GOP. You can't have George H.W. Bush without Reagan. You can't have George W. Bush without Reagan. And you damn sure cannot have Donald Trump without Reagan.
Yeah, and the thing is Reagan got his start out of Nixon.
Sure.
He was influenced, at least, by Nixon.
Yeah. Well, wasn't Nixon the one, or was it Ford who named George H.W. Bush director of the CIA?
Yeah, I don't remember which one, but I know one of them did. Yeah, and, there's enough blame to go around. I mean, look at the amount of stuff that the Bush family had over the years.
Sure.
Before H.W. or W.
Well, earlier Brian sent an email in which he said, you know, China has an emerging middle class because they have our jobs. That entire effort was spearheaded by Bushes. See, I remember back when H.W.'s brother Prescott Jr. was the head of the U.S.-China Chamber of Commerce and pushed like the very devil for permanent most favored nation trading status with China.
Yeah.
And then, of course, that got finalized during the Clinton administration. And then that's when the economic shit hits the fan.
Yeah, and they blame everything on Clinton because he went along. But I don't know. I mean, it's just I don't know. I'll just be happy.
Go ahead.
Okay, I was just thinking about, to get on the lighter side, how do you get beef to cook good on the acorn?
I end up
getting dry.
It depends on what you do with it. My favorite cut of beef, if you're smoking, Okay, are you still there, Samson? Did I lose you? Well, I owe apologies. Because in the middle of a clear blue sky, Appalachian Power just freaking crashed. I wish I was kidding. I'm not. Not a cloud in the sky. It's a lovely 81 degrees here in the studio. And Appalachian Power just flat out went down for about a minute and a half. So I apologize. Samson, if you're still listening, and I show we're still connected, or maybe we're not. No, we're not. Hopefully I'm still streaming. I can answer your question. If you're smoking, my favorite cut of meat is a whole sirloin tip. Or at least a piece of a sirloin tip. You put the temperature probe in. You never let it get above 160 degrees or so. And you wind up with something moist and wonderful. Steaks, you've just got to eyeball and you cook those over high heat. You can't leave them in there anytime. So that's the answer to that question. I'm sorry I lost you. On behalf of Appalachian freaking Power, I apologize. Worthless bastards. Okay, so apparently the stream is at least back on the Horn stream. I don't know about head on.live. TuneIn's back. Went dead there right after reality folding in it. Huh? That's even further away. No, I was talking to Samson about grill stuff, and then gone. Okay. And that's because we've got a bad power supply here. Anyway, so but the uninterruptible power supplies held up on the streamer and on the modems, and then everything else went bad. Never a dull moment. Dadgummit, that was a first time call from Samson, and I hope I haven't run him off because I promised it would be easy. Well, try again, Samson, sometime. Let's run over and check in and see if the stress line actually works. Are you there, Scott?
Testing. Microphone irking.
Yes.
Hear me,
I hear you, dandy. Okay. Can you hear me, Dimitri?
Yeah, you're coming. Turn down the music. You know, as you played that audio earlier, I was in the process of sending you that audio, so I can only conclude great minds work alike.
Well, it just naturally segued from one into the other.
Yeah. Anyway, I wanted to quickly try the stress line, and it seems to be working okay. Although you did give me a start, I thought the big one had occurred. You know, Elizabeth, I'm coming up. I'm coming to meet you, honey. But no, no one has to lift a finger for the little power problem to occur. All you have to do is be there, okay? So they've made poorly working so-called services effortless. All you've got to do is be a subscriber.
Here in West Virginia, all you have to do is, well, it's like that old Chinese proverb about if you sit by the river long enough, the body of your enemy will float by. Well, if you sit in your house long enough in West Virginia, Appalachian Power will fuck up.
Of course, it's in the natural order. Well, no, not the natural order. It's in the corporate.
And then they'll go to the PSC for a rate increase. Well, we fucked up again. I guess we'll need a rate increase. Oh, I think you do, poor babies.
Yeah. Well, SDG&E does that out here. I remember when I first moved to San Diego in the summer of 2000. Every third day, we would have random rolling blackouts, and it was connected to that scheme that was depicted in the film The Smartest Guys in the Room about Enron, where they were deliberately getting on the line and trickling in the supply of power because they were making it so expensive that the California Utility Advisory Commission, or whatever it's called, couldn't afford it. You know, so they would have to have these intermittent rolling blackouts. And I said, what have I gotten myself into here in sunny, oh, it's dark, California?
Yeah, see, anytime anybody brings up Enron, I'm reminded of that speech during the 2000 campaign in which a future dim leader said, hey, I want a government needs to be run like a business. I want to run. I want to run America like Enron. And you know what, Scott? He did.
He did.
And by by October of 2008, we were running exactly like Enron.
There you go. My buddy Ken. Oh man! Hey, if anybody has never seen Enron, the smartest guys in the room, the documentary in the world, it's a great, sad, telling piece of work.
It's a brilliant. It's a brilliant piece of filmmaking.
Oh yeah, yeah. I other than testing the stress line, I had a couple of quickies. Donald Trump Jr. Just remember, the road apple doesn't fall far from the horse's ass. That's words to live by. Fake news. What is that? It's nothing more than a clumsy reworking of Nixon Vice President Spiro Agnew's 1970 nugget, nattering nabobs
of negativity.
Yeah, negativism, I think is the exact. And that was penned by William Safire, who was a big GOP propagandist.
And then went on to become a beloved knower of words at the New York Times.
Yeah. And how do I know this, Bob? I know it from Google. So put that in your, and do it sideways, Mr. Trump, several times.
Repeatedly.
Yeah. Now, well, I have an
offer. Wait, no. If he took your advice, then he'd have to email you back and say you remind him of his daughter, Ivanka.
Oh, shit. It's hard work, but somebody has to do it. I have an observation. You mentioned your nightly treat.
Yes.
The single serving size of Haagen-Dazs ice cream.
Yep, nothing but cream, milk, sugar, eggs, vanilla, and no RGBH.
When I first saw those little things in the bottom rack of the frozen food ice cream aisle compartment, you know what they did to me?
What?
They laughed at me. Uproarious laughter.
You could hear the chuckling through the glass door of the freezer compartment, I'll bet.
Oh, no, they were cackling and howling because they know, those little Haagen-Dazs single-serve goobers,
they know you're not going to just eat one.
Oh, hell no. Hell no. The only practical purpose of those little things is to practice juggling. You get three or four of them going.
You know what? They are about the right size.
You can do kids' parties, you know?
I used to juggle. I can still juggle for about, 3 seconds.
Never did it. Always wanted to learn, and I always wanted to ride a unicycle. But I don't think that's ever going to happen.
I gave up my unicycling dreams when I fucked up the pogo stick.
There you go. Because one will lead to another, but you've got to get the first one right first. Have you ever tried Haagen-Dazs coffee ice cream? That's my weakness, Bob.
Yeah, but the thing is, because I've become such a snob, it's got guar gum and locust bean gum in it, and carrageenan.
Well, I don't know what the hell's in it. I think there's crack in it. Because I can
it's freaking wonderful.
I can't walk past the compartment there without, and I even have a little cooler bag to carry the ice cream home on the bus so that it doesn't melt. Oh man, and now they've got Haagen-Dazs in some of the flavors, and I don't know the exact size of it in terms of weights and measures. But I'm sure three of those normal-size Haagen-Dazs containers, at least 2.5, would fit into the large size. And so far, I've avoided picking up one of those.
I did notice vanilla in like Once upon a time, we would have called it a quart.
Yeah, it probably is a quart size.
Because quarts, pints, and then those little torture cups. But I got to say, Scott, I'm showing real restraint. I have one.
Are you?
Yes.
What do you mean?
I have one of them, and that's it.
Yeah, and that's.
And the next morning, I wake up, I check my blood sugar. It's not crazy. Mm. Now, if I sit there and go wild, it's going to be crazy.
No, I couldn't do just one. I am like, see, if I could be happy with like two cigarettes a day, I would start smoking again. Because I found out not long ago they still make my brand, Keratin 100s.
You're kidding.
But I had
they still make those?
Oh, yeah. I was in the liquor
those,
store.
And those filters are charcoal activated.
That's right. That's right. You can breathe smoke like the astronauts do.
And you'd rather fight than switch.
That's right. But I know myself well enough to know that if I had a pack of 20 of those bad boys in here, I would smoke them one after another. And I almost bought that pack that I saw in the display at the liquor store a couple of weeks ago.
But God almighty, in California, how much is a pack of cigarettes? Like $52?
Are you sitting down? Well over $6.50 for a pack. I remember in the early 70s when I became a committed smoker, I could go to Winchester, Virginia, in the exurbs of the D.C. area, buy a carton of whatever I was smoking at the time, lay down a $5 bill and get about 15 or 28 cents change for my purchase. A carton.
Yeah, I remember those days too.
Oh, man. Now I want to smoke.
No, you don't.
I have decided, Bob, that I'm going to wean myself off of the nicotine gum, which I've become hooked on. I'm going to buy myself a tobacco pipe and start smoking a pipe again.
That sounds like a fantastic idea.
Yeah.
Because, among other things, the pipe smoke, I mean, it's just pleasant.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And we're not supposed to smoke in these units, but I have a nice big set of steps in the front. I can sit there under the palm tree with my coffee and just puff away on my
I was
pipe,
doing fine
until
you brought up the palm tree. Now I'm miserable.
Well, no, don't be. Don't be. See, I think it was hotter there today in the Horn Studio than we got here. I think it only got up in my neighborhood to the upper 70s. But is there time to touch upon my take on this Richard Russell building?
Absolutely, but I do want to reinforce, if you like strawberries and you like a little bit of a chili zing, you got to try the fruit and honey spread with your with some vanilla ice cream. You just do.
What aisle is that in?
That'd be in your jams and jellies.
Okay, and Smucker's makes it?
Yeah, Smucker's fruit and honey strawberry jalapeno.
I must look for that.
Oh, it's righteous.
But see, that would mean you couldn't really use it on Häagen-Dazs coffee. You'd almost have to default to the vanilla, wouldn't you?
You know, I don't know that it might not be good on the coffee ice cream. But it's damn sure good on the vanilla.
Well, I will.
And see, you know, vanilla originated in Mexico. Chili originated, at least, you know, for the purposes of the Colombian exchange in Mexico. So there's nothing at all weird about vanilla and jalapeno at the same time.
Yeah, and Commander Quigg is still looking for those damn strawberries, or at least the key
right
to the locker. So
you had two servings. I had two servings.
This is Trump's future. He is going to be seated in a forum of some sort, frantically twitching and shifting his eyes, rolling two steel balls nervously in his hand. Talking about, I would have found the key to the locker, you know. But no, just I get the GOP hue and cry over renaming the Russell Senate office building to honor McCain, because that's their current little talking point to distract us from all the other shit that Trump's up to,
right,
along with his cronies. I get that. I am against the move for this reason. Okay, first of all, as we established in 72, Senator Richard Russell's name was attached to the building, the Senate office building. Now, he was a ardent white supremacist from Georgia.
Yes.
What's his name? LBJ. He took LBJ under his wing when Johnson first moved from the House to the Senate.
Right. I was aware of that.
If you've seen the great Bryan Cranston movie, LBJ, All the Way, some of that is featured. Their relationship is featured in that film. It's a great film, even if they didn't feature Richard Russell. But so, okay, he was an ardent white supremacist from Georgia, a man of his time, to be sure. Now, Trump and a large segment of the GOP hold fast to these notions, these hateful notions of Richard Russell, and worse. So I say no to any move to rename the building for McCain or anybody else. And here's why. Maybe one day when the GOP either dies out as a viable political party or when all the racists are no longer in places of prominence or authority in the GOP, a name change would be appropriate, but not now or even anytime soon, looking into my magic eight ball. I just don't see rewarding McCain's ineffectual being. Yeah, you know, it's like the broken clock. It's right twice a day. Occasionally, McCain got one right. But in the grand scheme of things, I don't think he'll make any discernible difference in the juggernaut action of the grand old party. Not a whit of difference.
No.
But that's just my opinion.
No, I think you're right. I absolutely do.
You know, and I don't. And this name changing of buildings and things has a vaguely Russian Soviet feel to it. You know, how they'll put you in the wall, the Kremlin wall, but they'll also take you out of the wall if you fall out of favor. And they'll airbrush you out of photos, and they'll, you know, it's like Orwell, you know, sending the revisions of news and reality through the pneumatic tube system. It's just crazy. There are more important things than the name on that building. So, am I ranting?
No, I get it. But we got to get out of here. But I'm glad you proved that the stress line works.
It does, and you sound great. And your filibuster was great today. I could sit here all afternoon, and almost did, listening to you talking about good stuff. And I like that. I like that in a talker, a word knower.
Well, thank you, Scott. I appreciate it a bunch. You take care. We'll talk soon.
You too. Take care.
Bye now. And hey, we know now that the stress line works. So I will thank you all very kindly, and thanks to our sponsors for this week of fundraising free broadcasting, the subscribers to the Horn. Thanks to all of you who share your precious finite time engaged in the program. Thank you, one and all. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you very kindly to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, for HeadOn.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thank you to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all.